We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out because I love you too much, baby.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and we have in our studio, we have Sheriff Chip Simmons, the Escambia County Sheriff. Sheriff, welcome back to the show. Good to have you, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. We're having way too much fun this morning. There are a lot of silly things going on in the world, and it's super entertaining. First question for you, the fair. How's the fair been going?
The fair's been going very well. I was over there last night, a second time. I don't go there every day, but I was there last night. The weather was nice. I'm a fair weather, fair type fair goer. It was very
good. Fair weather, fair goer.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. If it's cool enough, I can get
going
over
to
there.
Get your salad for lunch. Is that what you're?
Yeah, yeah. No, no, salads aren't meals. Remember? I can tell you what is a meal.
All right,
you know, turkey legs.
Yeah, turkey legs a good
stuff
one.
They got in there. They got these spiral potato things. They're pretty good. Those you can make a meal if you eat enough of those.
Oh yeah, and the way Mama Jane makes them, a funnel cake is a meal.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a funnel cake kind of guy. Yeah, I don't want to waste room in my stomach with that kind
what?
Of stuff. I'm a grown boy. I need real food.
Coke. All right. I just learn stuff all the time. Anyway, how is security at the fair going?
Well, I talked to a lot of the deputies. They haven't had any problems. You know, you got a little bit of arguments here and there, but as I understand, no arrests have been made. We haven't had any issues with the fair's decision to not allow open
firearms,
carry or concealed carry. There were some issues with people not reading the instructions online about what bags to bring and not to bring.
Because they have clear bags as a rule now, right?
There's a clear bag rule. So there's that, but you know, that's to be expected, I suppose.
Do people really bring bags to the fair?
Well, I mean, I guess
for kids
and wallets and keys,
purses,
and, stuff and I guess people that carry purses. Yeah.
Okay. Couple of stories. Let's see. You've got, the guy that I will name is Jeffrey Birdwell, 42-year-old, you would recognize the picture because he's the guy with all the face tattoos. Like, more than you have ever seen on a human being before, he's got. So
yeah,
basically, this
up.
Side of Jim Rose Circus, you've never seen so many face tats.
Well, and the bigger problem with him, besides the face tattoos, is that he is a sexual offender and he hasn't fulfilled his obligations to register. And so we're looking for him. We are looking for him, as I understand it. And we put his picture out. You know, like you said, go and take a look at it. You will recognize this bozo if you see him.
So he's required a mandatory report. He has not done that, and you're just looking for him for that. Not some other crime, but the mandatory reporting check-in kind of.
That's correct. But, but we take those mandatory reports very serious because people need to know. And there's a website that documents where all these sexual offenders live, and so you can know. You can take a look at your neighborhood, and so you understand you know, who's living in your area. Now, if you haven't looked at FDLE's site on these registered sex offenders and it's terrifying, quite frankly, the number of people have these.
Well, you can look at the, you can get the map. You pull up the map and you know, within the vicinity of your house, and you think, good gravy. and it distinguishes between, you know, what the blue and the red, you know, the offenders
predators
and the violent predators,
right.
Right? And you know, none of it's good, but you can pull up the details, and it's a scary. I mean, you know, go look, but it's not a pleasant thing to look up. The FDLE case with Chad Wren, the custodian at the Blue Angels Elementary, allegations of obscene communications to a child and so forth. He's now quit his job, but you guys are not involved in that case, right?
We're involved in a task force, but FDLE spearheaded that.
Okay,
that particular
so that's not really you guys. Okay. Any other incidents over the last week? It's been relatively calm, you know, as these things go. Sometimes we come and there's like 10, and this week we had, I mean, not that many.
We had an accidental shooting overnight. Someone actually shot themselves in the hand. We talk about this. Only reason I bring it up is because we talk about it. These things happen way too frequently.
Yeah.
And our fear initially was that with open carry, more people will carry. And that's why we encourage people to be familiar with a gun, be familiar with a holster and the way you carry. So, we had, it probably had nothing to do with open carry, but we did have an individual accidentally shoot their hand. So if they heard about or they saw on our website and on our app that there was a shooting victim, it was an accidental
and they're cooperating. This is a straightforward case, not anything else.
Yeah, one of the ones that because we had one recently, an individual got shot. I think I may have mentioned it to you before, that ended up getting shot in the chest over in DeVoe Way, I believe it was. And ran away
and survived.
He survived, and then he said, hey, we'll let you know whenever if I want to cooperate.
If I need to help
but
you.
But that's not the
figure
case.
Figure out who shot me.
It's an accidental discharge.
Have you had very many Do you see many people open carrying? I don't see anybody open carrying in Escambia County. Do you see many? Have you had many calls from businesses or anything? Or people just worried about it?
No. I've seen some other counties have some people that are what they call Second Amendment auditors.
Mm-hmm. Doing it to see.
They will test the government authority. Yeah. But I haven't seen anyone here in Escambia County. And perhaps it's because my take on it is you can carry open. You can, it's a more plain language interpretation of the Constitution versus whatever statute that was in existence before this DCA ruling.
John tells me that 200% of the people in Milton are all carrying multiple weapons all the time. So it's just
200%? 200%. He's not a math major.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's an accountant.
Oh, well, maybe they have more than one gun.
That's exactly right. I got a question here. Let's see. Somebody says, please ask the sheriff what the nuisance abatement vans are around the fairgrounds. Does that ring any bells for you?
Yeah. A couple years ago, we've been having some situations where people in neighborhoods were complaining about people doing drugs, and we would forward to our narcotics, but it wasn't enough. We couldn't get probable cause to determine that they were doing it and do a search warrant. So other agencies in the South, I noticed they had these vans, and they weren't secret vans. They were just, I think they called them nuisance abatement as well. And I thought, you know what, we have some older vans that we're going to cycle out of circulation. Why don't we put some cameras in those? Why don't we park those and have it feed right into our real-time crime center? And so we had one van that was so popular, we had to get another van, and now we
okay,
have,
so these are the spy vans.
It's those, yeah. The spy is kind of hard because it's got
it's
red
not
lettering
secret.
All
right.
over
right.
it.
I mean, it's a surveillance van, right.
With 20 cameras in each van. We started them at the beach also, and now we're using as many cameras as we can at the Pensacola Interstate
Got
Fair.
It, okay.
We have hundreds of thousands of people going through this. So we have our portable or our mobile video platforms that can telescope up.
Right.
But then we also have our drone unit out there, and we also have these nuisance abatement vans. There's no nuisance that we're aware of. It's the use of the cameras and all these cameras can feed into our real-time crime center.
So it's preventative, it's precautionary, it's having things. It's easier to have things available rather than have to wish you'd had them after the fact. Okay.
Right. Right.
Oh, by the way, apparently buying funnel cakes for the sheriff is going to be the new sport for my listeners, judging by the text. So just don't be surprised if that happens. You can always bring them by the station. Okay, you guys had some interesting drug data come in, right? Which it's hard to call it good news because anything other than zero is bad news. But you've had some interesting data that actually seems to indicate that things are getting better. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a report here that came out from the what's called 2024 Annual Drugs and Deceased Persons Annual Report. And what it showed was these are statewide numbers, and these are the latest that we have. And the information based on late of 2024, again, these things take a while to trickle in, that opioid caused deaths decreased by 32%, fentanyl caused deaths decreased by 35%. And I would tell you that those
that's statewide
are,
or Escambia County?
That's statewide.
Okay.
Now, as I understand it, the latest look that I had was that Escambia actually had a greater than in the 30s reduction in opioid-related deaths. As you know, we're part of this. We took advantage of this SAFE grant, which is a state fentanyl eradication grant, and fentanyl has been our top priority with regards to our enforcement efforts. And we've been partnering with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and that's where I got these stats from, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. And while, like you said, you can't, let's say it's the great news. The reduction is good news. One is too many, obviously,
right.
but things are trending in the right direction. It's better than having spikes in these types of things. But we're very aware that we've got a long way to go.
I'm working entirely on memory here, but I had it in my head that Escambia County was about somewhere between one a day and one and a half a day, like 300 to 500 a year, people were dying. From fentanyl overdose, from opioid overdoses, because I had it in my head that when the CORE program came in, the county's doing
right,
that it made a huge dent in that because we got people basically onto treatment that makes them not want, not enjoy drugs, and they're choosing that. What do you think is the explanation for the reduction? Is it? I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities here. There's the interdiction stuff is working, arrests are working, demand is down because people are on the CORE program. Honestly, addicts die, so there are fewer people to die because there are fewer people using anymore. I mean, there's all kinds of possible explanations here. Do you have anything that you particularly identify as the reason this is down? Maybe use is down because people are smarter. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think that you know, there's this multi-pronged approach. There's the letting people know. When we do our Blazer Academy, I make sure that those kids know fentanyl will kill you, and you do not know what drugs you're taking.
Yeah.
I take every opportunity to let people know. So there's education factor. I think that our enforcement efforts have paid huge dividends. I mean, there are people that are doing that are in prison now because they've contributed to the decline in the community with regards to overdose deaths. I think the federal authorities have taken a much harsher stance on it. I have to say that closing the borders will probably end up doing something with regards to the amount of fentanyl that's coming into our country. The CORE program, as you mentioned, I happen to have some stats on that. They helped over 400 people locally, and that has contributed to a 68% drop in overdose deaths since 2023.
Yeah, it's a great program.
Again, that's all these things combined. This is what happens whenever people get together, and this is a huge problem. And it sometimes we as a people are slow on the uptick there. But I think that once we got a hold of all this and seeing what was taking place, I think that everything in combination is certainly what's helping out.
You make me think of an odd question, but that's how my brain works. I remember years ago we used to have meth labs.
Right.
And people would blow themselves up, and they would do all kinds of, you know, and then they would do these kind of shake and bake labs. They'd do them in cars, all this kind of stuff. And then I remember talking with you about this a couple of years ago, that we basically had stopped seeing that because the cartels had gotten in the business of making, you know, real meth labs in Mexico or elsewhere, and it was so much cheaper, and they would just, you know, smuggle it across the border, and so you wouldn't have that made domestically. And so that was the situation. Bad because meth use was up, but also, in a way, weirdly good because people weren't, you know, doing meth labs locally. But with the border control stuff that's been going on, have you seen a change back to the old? Is it harder for them to get meth in because of that? Are you seeing more of it being domestically produced? Is this, I mean, did you get the question? I don't know if it's
absolutely. I will tell you that in the past, because of the meth labs, let me start with crack cocaine was a big issue.
Sure.
And then we really hit crack cocaine pretty hard. And then meth was an issue. We used to have our own meth labs. We had people trained to go into meth labs because they were so commonplace. Since then, we've basically stopped.
You had your own
meth
chemists, analysts.
Yeah. We had people that would go in there.
Got it. Okay.
That would handle the
technicians or whatever you want to call them, specialists.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it now, but basically, it's people that get suited up and they go into these meth labs and they take care of them.
Okay.
You know, they collect the evidence and that sort of thing.
Got it.
So we don't fund that anymore because
it left the country.
It's very expensive, and we just don't see them. We would call FDLE or we'd call someone else for it now. So it is a conversation that we're having, as you mentioned.
Okay.
If they're not getting it from across the border, then they're going to probably start making it again, or they could. Nate probably is kind of a strong word, but they may well decide to make it in the kitchen sinks again.
Right.
And that's something that we're very aware of. I mean, we try to keep track of these trends and try to stay ahead of them. Obviously, it's very difficult because these, you know, the analogs and stuff associated
right.
with various drugs. But we're working very well with the Attorney General. On staying ahead of the trends, and it's at this point we're seeing some improvements.
Last question for you, and I just bring this to your attention because you may not have seen the story. Mobile police officers, I guess Mobile has gotten some deal on iPads because their EMS is using iPads to do the frequent flyers to kind of get them not to take an ambulance. But the police department has iPads they're using to connect mental health clinicians to people who are previously likely to get arrested for petty crime, like loitering. And they say 72% of those individuals are brought to the crisis center for help by law enforcement instead of going to jail. I don't know if that's a program you've heard about or if there's anything like that that you guys have considered trying or if that's even an ongoing problem in our county. But again, I thought it was kind of innovative, a way to use technology to it's not quite the what do you call it, when the court system moves them out of the courts into, you know, diversion.
Drug court.
It's not diversion, but it's sort of in that thinking model.
It's proactive. I don't know exactly what they're doing. I can tell you that we have a mental health unit, as we talked about,
uh-huh.
with the internal aspect, but also we have a partnership with Lakeview where we have clinicians that actually go with us and what they'll do some proactive work as well, and they'll respond to potential Baker Act calls, and again, as someone gets transitioned out of the Baker Act facility, then they will help us and work with us. So we do gather that information. They do proactive, screening of individuals that might be that might not keep their medication on hand,
right,
or might not be able to take their medication, or might not be willing to take their medication. So we do some of that. I'd have to take a look at and see what Mobile's doing. Are you talking about not every deputy? They just have the clinicians that are working with that.
It seems to be they've identified a target population that they think this will help with or work with, and, I don't know a lot of details, but I thought it was interesting, and I wanted to bring it to your attention. So,
mental health is certainly a very big factor. You know, we talk about where we're kind of slow on the uptake on some of these things, and some of that I would say that not just law enforcement, but as a community, the mental health aspect of things, and people have no idea how many people that we encounter every day that they're going through some sort of a crisis or mental health episodes.
And I think in both of these cases, both MPD and their EMS are both like the iPad is only usable for this one application. Like it's totally locked into that one application. It's not like you can use it for everything else. Sheriff Chip Simmons, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you for what you do, keeping us informed, entertained, telling us you don't like funnel cakes. We'll still be friends.
That's not that I don't like them. I'm just...
You said what you said.
There's other things.
Don't backtrack now.
You've seen all the food in there.
I know.
So there's no salads. I'll stay with that. No, for meals. As a side salad.
Yeah,
only.
The fair salad booth is the least, all organic food right here, baby.
No one's there.
Nobody's there. Sheriff, thanks for the time.
You bet. Y'all take